This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
For those fleeing war, cash is king. Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. Good morning. It's nearly 3 months since an armed conflict broke out in Sudan. The United Nations is now warning the country is on the verge of an all-out civil war. Thousands have fled to neighbouring countries, including 250,000 people who fled to Egypt. When it comes to the humanitarian response, cash payments, rather than providing food and other goods, are playing an increasing role. The UNHCR, that's the UN's refugee agency, increased its global cash payments by a third to $1 billion last year. It already runs cash programs in Egypt and is now distributing aid to Sudanese refugees through the Egyptian post office network. James Graham has been speaking to Rasha Batarse, who runs the program in Cairo.
Cash assistance, the importance of it has been increasing as a really a super dignified way for refugees, asylum seekers and internally displaced persons to meet their basic needs.
I've heard that phrase about it offering more dignity. Can you just expand on that? Why do you think it works much more than other forms of aid?
There's something that's very important where refugees know what are their needs, you know, whether they want to use the cash assistance for rent, whether they want the cash assistance to get food. And that has been proven really over the years. I was working in Jordan operation when we started the cash program, maybe in 2008. Before that, we were providing, for example, you know, food packages. And Iraqi refugees then were not using the food, the items that we thought that they're good in the food package, you know. So during really consultations, the move has been to cash instead of providing things that they don't necessarily need. Second, they don't have to wait in queues to just, you know, hold those boxes of food packages or non-food items like blanket or others where they might need, for example, to pay the transportation to go to school or to pay the rent or to pay the utilities or to get a medicine. So it really offers them the ability to immediately prioritize and choose their needs. And they, of course, it will make people in need less likely to resort to harmful and negative coping strategies. So whether we're talking about child begging, child labor, you know, being homeless or begging in the streets.
Is it also easier for you as an organization, you know, rather than having to buy lots of goods and worry about logistics, you can just transfer money?
Yes, exactly. It's definitely even cheaper. So what's also amazing about cash assistance is that there's no cost. The cost is really minimum, just for example, for the, you know, for the bank fees, which is usually UNHCR gets really a great quotations from the private companies because we do it in bulk.
How many people can you reach with your budget?
For the emergency cash until the end of the year, and it's of course based on the budget that we receive, it's based on the individuals that will be entering the country. Our target is around 51,000-52,000 individuals. And for the regular monthly cash assistance, it's around 21,000 individuals.
But presumably you get too many applicants. How do you pick the people to support?
Yeah, of course. That's difficult and challenging, and we really need to keep monitoring. So for the emergency cash, it's more generous and easy, because in most of the, if not all of the cases, refugees come with their very basic needs. So the condition, first of all, is to have entered Egypt on the 15th of April or after that. You know, they should be one of from the new arrivals, and coupled with basic categorical approach in terms of, you know, large families, families with disabilities, female head households. For the monthly, it's really, unfortunately, we have to make it more rigid because we don't have the capacity to help all vulnerable people. We have to put a certain, again, prioritization to give the priority for the most in need. And again, this does not mean that the others don't, but it's just prioritizing based on our budget availability.
That was Rasha Batarse of the UNHCR. Now let's do the numbers. European stocks are up as investors await the release of US inflation data. And in India, shares in online gaming firms slid after a 28% tax was announced on funds that these gaming companies collect from their customers. Nike Canada and mining company Dynasty Gold are being investigated in Canada over allegations they used forced labour from China's Uyghur minority. Here's the BBC's Luke Wilson.
The investigation into the two Canadian companies was announced after a coalition of 28 civil society organisations filed several complaints last year about their overseas activities. Rights groups have said that more than 1 million Uyghurs and other mostly Muslim minorities have been held in re-education camps in China's western Sanjin region and face all kinds of abuse. Now, Beijing has denied these accusations, describing those facilities as vocational centres designed to curb extremism. Nike Canada has said it has suspended its relationship with a Chinese supplier that identified using Uyghur forced labour. The second company, Dynasty Gold and Mining, was accused of benefiting from the use of Uyghur forced labour at a mine of theirs in China. The company holds a majority stake there, but says it had left that region when these allegations were made.
Luke Wilson there. Now to Spain, and Barcelona Soccer Club is branching out into an unlikely industry. It plans to raise money by making diamonds out of grass from the pitch at the famous stadium, the Nou Camp. They'll be made into bracelets, pins and necklaces. The BBC's Sam Fenwick spoke to Rob van Burden, a diamond dealer and expert based in Antwerp in Belgium, and she asked him, can you really make diamonds out of grass?
Yes, you can. Any material that you can break down to one element only, being carbon, you can make a diamond out of it.
What's the process? How does it work?
How are diamonds formed? If Mother Nature had a recipe card, it would say, take carbon atoms, place them about 100 miles down in the Earth's mantle, heat them to at least 2,200 degrees under 27,000 pounds per square inch. Now, set the timer for 1 billion years.
Okay.
Allow to cool completely before slicing and serving. That's how natural diamonds are made. Now, it's similar to, let's say, the difference between natural and cultured pearls. Mm-hmm. The former occurs by chance, while the latter is aided by humans.
Okay. And so what about the value of these diamonds? Are they as valuable as the ones that you dig out of the ground?
No. And there's, well, we always say there's not enough disclosure when it comes to value. So let's say that the retail value of a synthetic or lab grown diamond, by the way, that's no different than a natural diamond, but it was fabricated yesterday in a Chinese factory or even in a UK factory, because you have factories too. These go retail half the price of a natural diamond. Now, by disclosure, I mean, if you were ever to put it up for sale again, then you may get 10% return on your dollar.
Diamond dealer Rob van Burden there, and I'm Leanna Byrne with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org /bookclub.